Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations.
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
So welcome to WBFO's What's Next. I'm your host, Saladin Ala, Director of Community Engagement at the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center, Public Projects Coordinator for the Niagara Falls National Heritage Area, and founder of the Atlantis School for Gifted Youngsters. Today we have a few special guests who are here in the Western New York area working in the space of preserving Black history, as well as history related to the Underground Railroad. And we're going to talk about the proposed Harriet Tubman byway that is important for all of you to know because it's something that's going to impact our local economy in terms of the cultural heritage tourism. With us today, we have Josh Poole, who is a graduate of SUNY Geneseo as a historian. He's also operations manager for the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center, and he is a part of the Harriet Tubman Byway Steering Committee. We also have with us Lily Wiley Upshaw, who is with the Michigan Street African American Heritage Corridor. She's a board member and treasurer, as well as a chair of the Buffalo Niagara Freedom Station Coalition, which is the organization that actually owns the Michigan Street Baptist Church. So she's going to be filling us in on some of the exciting news with the renovations and the opening of that site. And we have with us Ali Smunger DeGon, who is the president of IRCNES, which is the Underground Railroad Consortium of New York State, and is a part of the internal planning team member of the Harriet Tubman Byway, as well as the director of public art for the Niagara Falls National Heritage Area. How's everybody doing today?
Very well. Thank
you. Good. And thank you for being with us. I was really excited to speak to all of you because there's a lot of people that are not really familiar with what the actual Harriet Tubman Byway is. So it gives us an opportunity to share that information with the public as well as for them to get an idea of how they could actually be involved in this. I also wanted to kind of talk to all of you about the work that you're actually doing. And like we had this discussion before we were online that, you know, a lot of times people don't have an opportunity to learn about the kind of important work that's going on behind the scenes and get a chance to really see the type of work that people are actually doing. So I'm excited to have that type of discussions with all of you today as well. So to start, I wanted to kind of ask a question to you, Josh. You are a graduate of SUNY Geneseo, correct?
Yes.
And a historian. And from my experience, usually people that go to school for like history, it appears as if it's a very limited profession. You know, most people think that you go to school to be a historian, all you can do is just teach history in like middle school or high school. Are there other different type of opportunities that you found for having that type of experience in that field?
Yeah, definitely. It's funny you mention that because, you know, honestly, that was my perspective going into school. I actually entered college as a physics engineering major, which anyone knows me now, that's not me. I kind of entered it with that mindset of, you know, college is only something to earn money off of, right? Or to get a good career, to that sort of focus. But when I was, you know, in my sophomore year, I didn't really enjoy my classes. I was reflecting a lot, and I found that my passion has always been history. From a very young age, it started with growing up, hearing stories of my family, our history, You know, also in my community, exploring my neighborhood and you know, finding remnants of the past. And that was always my interest. So I made that decision. And at the time, I think it was pretty bold. But then I started exploring the options, right? And, you know, you will hear a lot about, you know, you can only teach, right? And I had mentors in my life tell me that as well. But I started exploring the options. And, you know, I will be honest, there's not a laid out path for someone trying to pursue history. Right. It's not like if you want to become a teacher, you know, there's a way, there's a method of doing that. But with history, it was a lot of forging my own way. And I started off with just trying to get an internship. I got an internship over in Lockport, Niagara History Center. And by pure luck, at the end of that, I ended up loaning an artifact to our current museum. Which now sits there. It's a picture from the Cataract House. And just from that one moment, I was able to talk with one of our coworkers, and that led me to certain other opportunities. And so, you know, I'd say to anyone interested in this sort of field, this sort of work, it's a lot of community work. It's a lot of networking. And now that I've had the opportunity to kind of experience a lot of this, I see the opportunities. I see the doors, especially through the heritage area, seeing like all the different kind of work. For example, over the summer, we were standing on top of a mausoleum in a cemetery. And I was thinking in that moment, I never expected this as a historian, right? Standing on top of a mausoleum. But doing that research and doing that important work, there's so many opportunities, whether it be historic preservation, whether it be building a byway, whether it be doing independent research or working in an archive or, you know, being a tour guide. There's so many opportunities.
Wow. So now with the current landscape that you see politically in this country, do you see that it's even more important for people to be invested in that particular profession?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I come from a family of blue collar workers, right? Teachers, mechanics, that sort of profession, really. And so, you know, what I do is you know, not typical for where I come from. And, you know, I think one of my passions for it was seeing a lot of the issues that a lot of my family members were dealing with, and I wanted to do something about it, right? If I knew I followed an engineering footstep, I would just be working and I couldn't do anything about it. And so for me, history was important because I had the opportunity to have conversations with people about what is going on in our world, right? And so speaking personally, I'm a what I call a social historian, right? And if you know, look at how people have studied the past, they typically haven't viewed it from that perspective of a social historian, right? And what I do differently is I try to look at ordinary, everyday people, and I try to use their stories to understand the past or the world we're living in. And oftentimes what you find is there's parallels and rhythms, right, between any time period, right? And if you look at these stories of ordinary people, you often find that everyone has a shared humanity, right? And, you know, you may meet people who you think are different from them, right? But when you invest into history, when you invest into, you know, supporting these stories, when you invest into, you know, cultural heritage tourism, right? You have the opportunity to open people's eyes, right? And have the ability to see the similarities in themselves with many other people, right?
Yeah. And speaking to that cultural heritage tourism, and then also just to the preservation of stories, Lily, as the chair of the Buffalo Niagara Freedom Station Coalition, which actually owns the Michigan Street Baptist Church, you've had your hands in actually doing this type of work in terms of preservation. Could you tell us a little bit more about what's going on recently with the Michigan Street Baptist Church and what your role actually is as the chair?
So you're right. I've been involved in volunteering down with the Buffalo Niagara Freedom Station Coalition, I think maybe it's been 7 or 8 years now. I'm not even 100% sure. Mm-hmm. But before I arrived on the scene, there had been a great deal of community activism around preserving the spaces on Michigan Street. Mm-hmm. And before me, there have been other people that sought to save the Michigan Street Baptist Church and to elevate those stories. For people who don't know, the church was started by the Second Baptist Congregation, which was formed here in the city of Buffalo in 1836.
Wow.
And they started building the church in 1845, and they completed it in 1849. Mm. And much of the original structure that they built in 1849, I think that's 176 years ago, still wow. remains to this day.
Wow. So people could actually go see that.
People
today.
Can actually walk in, and you're going to be stepping on the floor that Mary Talbert stepped upon. You're going to be in spaces where everyday people, everyday African-Americans came together to carve out and create a community here in the city of Buffalo. 80% of the people who built that church were freedom seekers.
Mm.
And so we know that when they came here, that the church structure served not only as a place of worship, but as a place for them to build that community, that safe space in which they could really define for themselves the kind of community and relationships they wanted, whatever they wanted. They were free. Mm. And so the work that I've been doing, so I'm not a trained historian, but I have really been very fascinated my whole life with understanding the stories of the past to help inform our present and to help chart a future in which we hopefully don't make all of the same mistakes. Mm. Or if we find ourselves in a situation where history may be repeating itself, that we take the lessons of how other people persevered, ordinary people, to Josh's point, how they persevered through those circumstances and apply those strategies to what we may be facing in the present. Mm. And so I don't know why, but I really feel this connection to sharing that history, because when I think back, you know, it just feels so unlikely in the circumstance of the day that you'd have this group of people. First of all, they had to go through the Underground Railroad, which go through whatever process they needed to escape enslavement and come to this state, to New York, and then come together to build this church and then start to carve out an identity and a space for themselves in the city of Buffalo, because they were free. But we know that even at that time, they still faced discrimination. They still faced barriers here in the city as they were forging a new life for themselves. But they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And they left this place, this beautiful place that it feels like you're stepping on hollow ground. They left this place for us.
Mm.
They didn't want, I'm quite sure that those folks never imagined that people would be walking in, sharing their stories or holding them in such reverence. I think they thought, this is just what you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's putting one foot in front of the other. It's persevering. It's surviving. It's trying to help our kids to thrive. But yet, here we stand. And we do tell the stories of not only Mary Talbert, but we tell the stories of Emmeline Coy, who was one of the longest serving members of the church who lived next door.
Mm.
When Mary Talbert wrote a history of the church, she quoted Emmeline as saying that when Emmeline Coy came to the Michigan Street Baptist Church, there was no cushion on the pews, on the benches. It was a comfort that was not needed. And there was a potbelly stove in the corner that was known to give out gas as much as it gave out heat. But to Emmeline, her words, this was the most beautiful place this side of heaven. And wow. You can imagine why it would have been.
Mm.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I just feel incredibly humble to be able to help to share those stories. And we have received a great deal of community support in federal dollars, local county dollars, state mm-hmm. dollars, huge investment by the state. So we now have, the church is now structurally sound, and we just have reopened it because we've done the interior renovations to restore it to the way that it looked. And it's just beautiful.
Wow.
Wow. So in terms of when can people actually go and actually see it?
So people can come in on Saturdays for the rest of this month, February, and then for the rest of March. Right now, we're part of the Heritage Corridor, the Michigan Street Heritage Corridor. So in addition to the church, there's also the Colored Musicians Club is one of the anchor institutions, the Nash House Museum, and also the WFO Black History Radio Collective. So all of us are part of the commission, and the commission has a charge to not only help to bring the four anchor communities and elevate that, but they also have a charge to share the whole story of Michigan Street. Because while there are all of these individual stories that took place in these spaces, there's also just the story of what was happening on Michigan Avenue, right? And that that was really the beginning seeds of the Black community. And so the corridor is charged with really doing so much to uplift Michigan Street, economic advancement, bringing new businesses in, telling the stories of all the other ordinary people. I keep going back to Josh's point, because that is so significant, I think, to look at the lives of the people who lived and worked there every day and to talk about those things. And that's part of what the Corridor Commission is doing. So the church, we're open through the month of February, March on Saturdays from 11 to 1. We're doing two tours, but we can accommodate 75 people per tour because the church is that big. Wow. So people can go online to the Michigan Street, Michigan Street African American Heritage Corridor website, and they can register for the tours. There is a charge because we do have to raise revenue in order to just keep the lights on and keep the church opening, because this is a not-for-profit organization and all of our work, you know, is for the community.
Oh, yeah. And then just as an institution, it's worth noting that, you know, institutions and organizations that tell these type of stories of African Americans are traditionally underfunded.
Yes.
Right. And most philanthropic sponsors and support is like maybe 8% goes towards these type of institutions. So it's vitally important that we are invested in that kind of way.
That's right. And and as I had mentioned earlier that there had been people that have been working to save these spaces on Michigan Street for many more years than me. And those names are names that we know, like George K. Arthur and Sharon Holly and George Scott and Dave and Danny Williams and Bishop Henderson and others. And during that time, it was really them putting not only, you know, their own might or hand to the task, but whatever treasure they had too. And we were very fortunate that there was an effort that was made with Buffalo Billions money, and we were part of East Side Avenues. And when East Side Avenues came, you know, that was a combination of philanthropy dollars and state dollars to come in and look at some key neighborhoods on the east side and to revitalize them. And Michigan, you know, we benefited from that. So that's when we were able to hire an executive director for the corridor, and state dollars really have flown to us for all of these capital projects. So we're in a rare moment when we have the opportunity to do the capital work that has been needed for so long. But we don't want to stop there. One of the things I'm delighted about are the relationships that the Buffalo Niagara Freedom Station Coalition and the corridor are building, especially with the Heritage Center, because we want to do programming where we connect all of these stories.
Yes.
Because that's what's been missing too, right?
Yes.
Like when we hear the history, we don't hear all of it. We don't get a full picture and sense of all of the work that was happening. And I think that that is also critical to the stories of the region. People come in and they know about the what was the big thing that happened with the lights and stuff, the World's Fair, right? Not the World's Fair. What's it called?
The Pan Am.
The Pan Am. So people know Buffalo about the Pan Am, but do you know that Mary Talbert, who was a member of the church, African American leader, she protested that? You probably knew. You probably know that, but other people may not have known that is also a key part of the story. And so one of the other things I think is our obligation or responsibility is to make sure that when people hear the history, they hear the whole history, especially now, because we know there's a direct effort to silence those voices, to not sort of tell the full picture.
Yeah.
And that's critically important for us to understand ourselves as a people.
Absolutely. And to your point in terms of this coalition or this connection to these various different institutions, the Underground Railroad Consortium in New York State, Ali, you're the president of this organization, and that organization seems to be doing that work in terms of connecting sites across the state. Could you talk a little bit more about that preservation effort and seeing that connectivity of these institutions related to Underground Railroad history across the state?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Underground Railroad Consortium of New York State, URCNES for short, we have been a nonprofit since 2015, and that stemmed from representatives from Underground Railroad history sites and programs across the state way before that, just starting to work together. It really stemmed from actually funding or lack thereof, funding support, really coming out of some folks in Albany and wanting to band together to be a stronger voice. And so they really started that groundwork in the early 2000s to really come together and be able to be a stronger voice. And so as that kind of spread across the state, just like starting any new nonprofit, you know, kind of started with the basics, volunteer board of directors, just a couple dollars, and a lot of passion. I joined shortly after in 2016 as a representative from the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center. And I was all in. I loved what they were doing, again, a volunteer basis. Some were also volunteers at their own sites or running their own organizations because they saw the need for that and the invisibility of these stories. And so really coming together was really something that really set the stage for where we're getting to with the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Byway. In order for that to be where, you know, we're going to talk about it in a little bit in more detail, where it is today, that groundwork needed to be laid of that connectivity with folks who were invested with their time, their passion, their energy, and their commitment to authentic storytelling, story sharing, and making sure that the truth and the full truth of the people who were the Underground Railroad, who created it, who operated it, who were on it, that those stories are at the forefront. And so the Underground Railroad Consortium, as I said, is all across the state. Our partners, our representatives, are in all parts from, you know, Brooklyn, New York City, Hudson Valley, Adirondacks, Elmira, here in Western New York, Buffalo, Niagara Falls, but also Rochester, Harriet Tubman's chosen hometown of Auburn, New York. It's really incredible to learn and start, you know, meeting the folks who are the keepers and sharers of these stories.
Absolutely. And I could imagine too that visiting different sites, you have an opportunity to learn as well in terms of the things that they're doing and also to get inspired. And I think that connectivity is also important in terms of that kind of like cross-cultural pollination, as I call it, because there may be things that we're doing here in Western New York that we can learn from our folks who are down in Central New York and further downstate, right? So we're going to take a short break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more specifically about the Harriet Tubman Byway.
Public media is your gateway to discovery. From investigative journalism on Frontline to live local performances on WNED Classical and tiny stage sessions from WBFO The Bridge, Buffalo Toronto Public Media connects you to the stories, music, and moments that matter most. Explore what we have to offer at WNED.org. This is Public Media.
This is Jack Cruiser with The Scoreboard on WBFO. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at WBFO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
PBS Learning Media provides free learning resources like our series, Compact History. Follow Corey, a time-traveling middle school history teacher, as he journeys beyond your textbook. Learn how history surrounds us and includes you, and find activities and tools to expand your knowledge. Check out the Compact History Collection on pbslearningmedia.org. You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're back with more What's Next. I'm your host, Saladin Allah. And before the break, we started to talk a little bit about the Harriet Tubman Byway. So, Allie, you started to talk a little bit more about that. Could you give us a little bit more insight into what the Harriet Tubman Byway is? And then Josh and Lily, we're going to talk a little bit more about your roles in helping with this important initiative.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Underground Railroad Consortium of New York State had all of its partners, the sites and programs, have been talking for a long time about building a byway. And it stemmed from Maryland's efforts, actually. So Maryland designated their byway in 2008, so the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Byway in Maryland. And since that time, it's always been kind of the talk of, well, we should have a byway here in New York State to elevate these stories and to bring recognition to Harriet Tubman's experiences also in New York State and not just Maryland. And our colleagues in Maryland over the years have always been in support and on board. But as byways are individual to their own states, unless it's a All-American Road designation, which is kind of the next goal, Maryland has, kind of been like, we're here for support. Ask us questions. Let us know. In 2017, I was in Maryland and I presented with one of their leads, Marcy Ross at the time. And we really started getting together around kind of like, really, can we make this happen, this byway? And our partners here in New York State, we're really just really wanting it to happen. And a colleague and partner as well, Karen Kuhl, out of Cayuga County in Auburn, Harriet Tubman's chosen hometown, had brought a grant opportunity to us, and we worked on a grant through the state, and we received that grant through the EDA Tourism Subawards Grant. So we really looked at the creation of a byway from the tourism perspective, which is exactly really what a byway is. So it is a designated road with the goal of marketing that to travelers so that they can experience the intrinsic qualities of that byway. The Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Byway in New York State would be historic as its intrinsic qualities and also recreational as well, because it focuses on the journey of Harriet Tubman and other freedom seekers on this network. Now, a lot of folks will ask, well, is it Harriet Tubman's actual, footsteps she took? Is it actual route? And it is not her exact route, because we don't fully know that. The Underground Railroad, we have pieces of information today, and we share those stories as was shared with us through historical documentation, evidence, and even oral histories as well. So through our research and research of many noted historians, we know that the general direction that she traveled and the ways that she traveled, which in New York State was by train. And so we mapped that out and we aligned that with also what you have to do for creating a byway with Department of Transportation regulations and actually driving on a road, because it is a roadway. For example, we really focused on the general direction, but keeping near the train tracks and route, and the riverways and the waterways, because that's also how freedom seekers traveled. Because the Underground Railroad was a network of people, places, and people sought their freedom by any means necessary. So whether they went by foot, carriage, train, water, all of that was used. And so we really want to look at the interpretation through the byway, or with the byway, to share those stories, again, of ordinary people and the ways that they communicated and moved and created this incredible network to secure freedom for themselves and others.
Okay. So when you, for clarification, when you say creation of a byway, Are you referring to like roads actually being constructed, or is there any physical component to building an actual byway?
Yeah, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. So there isn't going to be any new roads built. Mm-hmm. The byway route traverses existing roadways, mm-hmm. And it doesn't go on highways. And the whole point of that is to direct visitors into places that they can experience. Mm. So in the case of the Harriet Tubman Byway, it's the intrinsic quality of historic. So it's going to museums, to the sites of perhaps crossing, if we're talking about waterways, or where the trains went, or the sites of, let's say, Stephen and Harriet Myers, their residence, their former home in Albany, New York, mm-hmm. who were conductors on the Underground Railroad, where Harriet Tubman also passed through to Auburn, where Harriet Tubman, again, you know, spent a lot of time and built her home, mm-hmm. and brought her parents to live as well. And of course, Niagara Falls, too, which was Harriet Tubman and many other freedom seekers' final crossing points right outside of the Niagara Falls Underground Railroad Heritage Center. So the roadways are already existing. There would be signage through the Department of Transportation that says mm-hmm. that you're traveling on a byway. And then there is also all the economic drivers, the marketing and tourism behind it to make all those connections to direct visitors, to drivers, to travelers, even multimodal transportation of folks who might be walking, folks who might be on bikes or on boats. Mm. The main mode of transport is by car. So again, it's on roadways, but there's many other ways that we're building in accessibility through other means.
Wow. So that sounds cool. It's kind of like typically if I wanted to drive to New York City, I just throw it in Google Maps and it gives me the fastest route to get to New York City. And I just travel along the throughways. So it kind of sounds like this would be an alternative route, not just going along the throughways, but maybe mm-hmm. through communities where you kind of get, it sounds like it's like a scenic byway of sorts, where you have an opportunity to see things mm-hmm. and to go through communities that you typically may have not gone through if you're traveling from one destination to the next. Is that kind of accurate?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. It is the Scenic Byways program, actually, mm-hmm. But there's the different intrinsic qualities of what the experience is. And so we can also think about, you know, while the focus is historic, we're also thinking about scenic, too, in the sense of when traveling, I can think of when I was traveling the byway route recently through the Hudson Valley. I was seeing the Hudson River and the train tracks, the original train tracks location that were there since the time of Harriet Tubman's mm-hmm. journey. And I'm seeing the landscape. And while, yes, things do change, some of it didn't and doesn't change. And mm-hmm. I just... Being being able to have that experience working on this project of really thinking about it in that way of seeing the water and going, Harriet was looking at this, mm-hmm. others were, mm-hmm. and they were passing through here. And what did that mean for them? And how were they feeling? And what were they encountering? And all those questions and what that experience meant for me as a driver or as a traveler. And by going through the communities, that's the economic impact, mm-hmm. right? So if it's folks who are maybe traveling a part of the byway in the area of the state, maybe where they live, if they're in central New York. But it's also people who are coming from all over, whether that's international or from other states, who are interested in this experience. Mm-hmm. And they're going to spend their money in the communities that the byway goes through. Mm. Those smaller spaces, they're going to go to the museums, the restaurants. They might add on, you know, other experiences that have just is of interest to them. They might also do some shopping or mm-hmm. maybe see a small jazz concert along the way while they're having this experience that they're coming for to learn about Harriet Tubman and others on the Underground Railroad.
Yeah. So you spoke to the route of Harriet Tubman through New York State. Josh, as a historian, I've learned that you've worked more specifically on being able to document Harriet Tubman's travels through New York State. And from my understanding, that has not really been done yet. Could you talk a little bit more about some of the research you and some of your colleagues have been doing on that?
Yeah. And I just want to, you know, start off by saying that all of this information, all of this research, the documents, the data, this has been in progress for decades by descendants of freedom seekers or other people who have done amazing, immaculate work putting together these stories. And so when it came to the Byway, not only on the research side, but also on the interpretation side, we wanted to make sure we set a very good foundation. And so I was thinking back to something Lily said earlier about how some of these stories are untold, all right, or maybe only a certain perspective of these stories are untold, right? And so when you talk about the Underground Railroad, right, there's a kind of a lot of a certain perspective of what the Underground Railroad was. And I think of a book called Drapetomania. I don't know if you heard about it. But, right, that book was written by a Southern Confederate, and he saw people escaping. And in his mind, he couldn't imagine that, you know, a black person would want to escape, right, in his mind. So he wrote this book, and he invented this disease called drapetomania that said, oh, they must have had a disease that would want them to escape. Right? And people read that, and they believed it, right? And so when it came to this Byway, it was important that we center black voices, right? And we center their agency so that we were able to accurately represent what this history was. And so to get to your question about Harriet Tubman, there has been a lot of phenomenal research about her route through New York. But as Ellie said, we won't ever truly know the actual footsteps that she walked, right? So we had some few areas that were difficult to piece some certain things together, where exactly what she was. And so what we had to do was we had to take that social perspective, right? Like I was talking about earlier. And, you know, I say this, when you talk about the past, you hear about the Mount Rushmore, right? So when it comes to Underground Railroad, you hear about Frederick Douglass, you hear about Harriet Tubman. You know, when it comes to civil rights, you're going to hear about Martin Luther King Jr., Malcolm X, Rosa Parks, but you're not really going to hear about many, many other people. And so if we wanted to figure out the way that Harriet Tubman actually took, we had to look at other people, right? We had to see who were the people, the ordinary, everyday people who came before her, right? Because she came on the Underground Railroad in the 1850s, right? But people have always escaped, right? And there's a lot of people like the Myers in Albany who, you know, in the 1830s, they're setting the foundations for the route that Tubman would later take, right? And so my colleagues and I, we were looking at those communities, right? Along the way that we eventually decided for the Byway, who were those communities? What foundation did they set? What did they carve out to set the foundation for people like Harriet Tubman to later show up? And so it was really amazing being able to uncover a lot of those stories along the Byway. And we were able to, you know, confidently say, right, this is the route that she took. If we look at this community, if we look at what they did, if we look at who was associated with Harriet Tubman and her connections, right, we know that she went this way.
Wow. It's something that, Lily, you mentioned earlier. You talked a little bit about Mary Talbert and some of the other important community members that were part of the Michigan Street Baptist Church. Have you seen in your experience that sense of erasure and just people not knowing these stories of people that are important? And how can this Byway actually amplify those stories and voices of people within that community?
Absolutely. I think we have seen, you know, voices erased or experiences just not shared many, so many times. People will visit the church and they'll say, oh, I never knew any of this, you know, took place. And I've been driving down Michigan for years and I was never aware that all of this happened right here in this little church. And I think that's the imperative that we probably all feel to a certain degree, and why you even want to do this work, because I think it's like, oh, everyone should know. Everyone should know about this, because these people were amazing. And what happened here throughout all of these odds, we really need to elevate. And we need to acknowledge and uplift our ancestors who did all of that. And the Byway, as Ellie said, is a perfect opportunity for us to start telling these stories in a very connected way. So the Byway will come through Michigan Avenue,
And so that will give people an opportunity to come and learn, come into the church, you know, visit what happened in the Colored Musicians Club, and they will be able to absorb all of that history when it's going through the byway. And it also gives us an opportunity in every community that the byway is going through to elevate all of those other stories and experiences too. So, for example, Frederick Douglass did speak in Buffalo like the first summer after he took his freedom. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if very many people know that, because right now we don't have any markers or anything that tells you that, like, he stood here and he said this. But we know it's documented. Mm-hmm. We know we have documentation of the Colored Persons Convention, and these were conventions that took place in the 1830s. They started across the country, where people came together, Black people came together to talk about what they were going to do with the present day circumstance, mm-hmm. right? And we know that there were members of the church that took a part of that. So this byway gives us a chance mm-hmm. to start then looking at what are all of those other stories that have not been told in our city that connect directly to the freedom story, right? To the abolitionist movement in the city of Buffalo that people need to know, and we need to elevate and talk about that. And so that's the one of the many aspects that I like about this project, because as one location, we're pulling together all of the connected communities in the city of Buffalo. The Freedom Bridge, what is the name of the Freedom Park? Mm-hmm. Freedom Park is another, which is the crossing at Ferry. You know, that we've been, this group, they're part of this conversation too. So we are in our city and in this one location, we're thinking about how we can pull it all together. Yeah. So as people are going through the byway, they'll see markers directing them, oh, go down here and see where Frederick Douglass talked. Oh, yes. Don't forget to stop and go to Freedom Park to see the crossing right here. And maybe they'll be able to add some elevated experience when people get down there. Don't forget that all these other, you know, these other events and things took place in the city, and stop and visit with those things. Because the potential for people to come, and I think you've said this on one of the shows, that heritage tourism, to walk in those spaces, you know, it's an experience that people are seeking. And when we know we have people together, that we have to fulfill all of their needs. You know, they'll want to eat. They'll maybe want a little bit of entertainment. Yep. And so this really gives us an opportunity to do that. And the connectedness across the state, and then even looking at your own region and being able to pull people together in those stops, I think that this is really just a phenomenal project for the city, for the state of New York.
Yeah.
And I'm thrilled that we're a part of it.
Yeah.
That we're doing it.
Yeah, so we're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more specifically on some more of those logistics of the byway, where it's at in terms of it coming online, and then also, more importantly, like, how can people be involved in this important project, because it seems like it's a win for everybody.
We at Buffalo Toronto Public Media take pride in bringing you your favorite national programs like Fresh Air, All Things Considered, and Morning Edition. But what makes WBFO so special are its local programs, learning together about how government works in bite-sized pieces on Compact Civics with host Corey McCants.
Here's a quick guide on polling locations. A polling place is where you cast your ballot during elections. In America, the term polling place refers to the building, while polling station refers to the specific room or area where voting happens.
And diving into pop culture and local happenings on Group Chat with host Bentley and a revolving panel of friends in the know.
I really miss having to actually wait to tune in for a show and be there at the certain time, like having to run home and like turn on the TV at a certain time to like watch your show.
Yeah. Like more national unity then too.
Yes.
Like we're
because,
all
you know,
tuned in.
Everybody is watching at the same time, and you can like call and
ever
say,
since
did you
streaming
see what
happened? It's just gone downhill.
This is Public Media.
Hey folks, Corey here with Compact Civics. I'm convinced there's something in the water in Buffalo, New York. Sure, maybe it's the Niagara River with all those minerals, but this city is known for more than snowy winters and chicken wings. It's full of standout political talent. Buffalo is a hotbed of U.S. presidential politics. Millard Fillmore, our 13th president, hails from there. And Grover Cleveland was mayor of Buffalo, governor of New York, and a U.S. president. On a somber note, William McKinley was assassinated in 1901 while visiting the Pan American Exposition, but that led to Theodore Roosevelt taking his oath of office in Buffalo. This city has given us prominent figures like the trailblazing Shirley Chisholm, the first African-American congresswoman and presidential candidate. Buffalo's civic spirit doesn't stop there. Others include Neil Abercrombie, former governor of Hawaii, and Kathy Hochul, governor of New York. And we can't forget about Frances Folsom Cleveland and Abigail Fillmore, both first ladies. Or pioneers of equal rights like Winifred C. Stanley, who introduced the first equal pay legislation. Buffalo's impact on leadership and civic dedication is off the charts. If the city of good neighbors keeps it up, maybe someday we can be known as the country of good neighbors.
Special thanks to our partners, the Buffalo Presidential Center, whose mission is to explore and share stories about Buffalo and Western New York's contributions to the U.S. presidency and national affairs.
Our mission at Buffalo Toronto Public Media is to serve our local community. And on WBFO, we do that by keeping you informed. We bring you important perspectives from your neighbors on what's next.
It's cultural heritage tourism. People go and they travel different places to learn about history and lived experiences that only took place in that area. Oftentimes you may have people in certain positions that don't understand the value of cultural heritage tourism.
And we investigate issues in our community, such as racial disparities and traffic stops.
The data breakdown by council district shows that Black people are stopped disproportionately to their population in all 9 districts. Lovejoy District leads the pack in terms of those disproportionate stops. Just 37% of the district's population is Black, yet Black motorists account for almost 70% of stop receipts issued there.
This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
We're back with What's Next. I'm your host, Saladin Allah, and we were just talking briefly about the Harriet Tubman Byway. Allie, you had mentioned that there's a byway that is currently active in Maryland. I think it goes through 2 counties, about 125 miles. And just a few years ago, they released an economic impact report that said that the byway generates a little over $30 million. What will be the length of the byway here in New York State? How many counties would it be going through? And I mean, I'm not sure what the actual economic impact would be, but I'm sure that it would be much more than the economic impact that we see with the byway of Harriet Tubman in Maryland.
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of building upon Maryland's success with their byway and their data and their information, we can kind of start to get a feel for what the potential and the possibilities are for us here in New York. And so our proposed byway throughout New York State would be 550 miles.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And been traveling that quite a bit. And that's 22 counties. Mm. And it's just about 170 municipalities that the road, the route itself, as it's mapped out currently, would go through. So when we think about how to even do some kind of like multiplying of economic impact, right? You know, 2 counties versus 22, 125 miles versus 550. There's a much greater landscape and distance and communities and places and jurisdictions. And so while that is also, you're like, whoa, that's really big. How are we going to do it? We are moving forward on it because of this connectability that we've been talking about here today, that we've been really successful with across New York State as the Underground Railroad Consortium of New York State. And to what Lily just really shared about, if we even just look at one area or one community and how everyone is coming together, whether they had before or they did sometimes or they did all the time or do all the time, they're coming together to move this forward, to have those conversations, to say, oh, yeah, we need the support over here. Let's bring so-and-so into the fold. Or, yes, I can help get resolutions. Or, what was the story at your site? Oh, can we check on this freedom seeker? And I'm just giving a couple examples of just kind of some of those conversations or ways to connect, shared programming, all that good stuff. And that's even before the byway is designated. So our goal is to have, we're working with New York State Department of Transportation on this right now. We have to submit a corridor management plan to their advisory board for review and approval before it can go to legislation in January 2026. So we're under a year out. It is very soon, but we are moving and grooving all across the state. Right now, what we're working on are seeking the and requesting resolutions of support from every jurisdiction on the byway, and that's, again, about 170. We have been actively doing that all across the state, and those resolutions are coming in every week from local champions, whether they're through the Underground Railroad Consortium of New York State or their community leaders or residents that we've been connecting with, and it's going really well. There's many to secure, but actually our first one was actually Erie County, which was really exciting that Western New York can kind of represent in that way. We have a couple more in Erie County, a couple more in Niagara County, but we're almost there here on this end of the state.
So those resolutions are basically the local government stating that they are in support of this byway.
Yes, it's two-part. It states the support so that DOT can move forward with designating the byway. And also, there's language in there that says that they won't, that the jurisdiction will not allow billboard signage to go up along the byway as it's supposed to be scenic. But any billboards that are already there, those are grandfathered in, they already exist. It's just for any new ones, and that does not pertain to, you know, local signage. If, you know, there's a restaurant on site and they want to put a sign up for their restaurant, that doesn't count. It's just the billboard in the standard advertising off-premise sense.
Okay. So in terms of just everyday people that would love to be involved in a project like this, like, where could they learn more information about this? How could they actually be involved?
Yeah, so right now we're working to build all of our marketing materials, but we do have a website, HarrietTubmanNYCorridor.com, and also you can find the information and link to from the Underground Railroad Consortium of New York State's website, which is ERCNES.org. So between those two, you'll be able to find a little bit more information on that. And we're doing a lot of that grassroots communication, again, talking to neighbors, local businesses, partners. We just did a bunch of outreach to the churches along the byway to garner letters of support. We're going to be reaching out to local businesses next. So here in the Western New York area, you'll be hearing probably a lot more, you know, over these next couple of months on that. And we'll also be having more public meetings around the work so far. And all that's going to be coming out soon.
Yeah. So thinking about like local champions of change in terms of making sure that the contacts for this byway, I could imagine, Lily, your role in American Street Corridor being kind of like a point person or contact. Can people get in touch with you if they wanted to learn a little bit more that's out here in the Erie County area?
So when Allie mentioned that public meetings were held, so that's the best way. So the commission actually hosted the two public meetings that we had, and Ellie's group came and they talked about the byway. So if they reach out to the commission's office, that's the central point of being able to get more information, or if they want to say, hey, I want to be involved with this. Our goal is to try to develop a coordinating or task team within the city of Buffalo that as the project continues to grow, that we can start working ourselves to encourage those businesses that get the letter to, hey, respond, see what's going on. We want to pull you into this. This is what the city can be able to do. I think the other part of the conversation is really also talking to our local government officials to see, you know, what help can we get to try to to put up some of these monuments or mm-hmm. other markers so that there's other things connected to this as people are traveling the byway. So this is really a project that will involve every aspect of the community, I think, to be able to really capitalize on this opportunity for the city and for the state. And so we're going to be working toward that. But if people want to find out about more information, or they just want to say, hey, I want to get involved, I want to be invited to the next conversation, mm-hmm. then they can reach out to the commission headquarters to be able to do that.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then the first week of March, I understand that there's going to be a Harriet Tubman Legacy bus tour that's going to be traveling the route from downstate New York City all the way here, through Auburn, through Buffalo, through Niagara Falls, to celebrate on Harriet Tubman Day, starting on March 7th to March 10th. And we would like to definitely invite members of your group back to do another show once mm-hmm. we get the bus tour here, so that people can talk a little bit more about their experience actually riding the route of Harriet Tubman. So Josh, Lily, Allie, I wanted to thank all of you for sitting down with us today to share a little bit more about the important work that you're doing, give people some insight into who you are and that important work with the Harriet Tubman Byway. This is Saladin Alive with WBFO. What's Next? Signing off.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.